Welcome to Gift of the City, a podcast highlighting the urban ministry of the Christian Reformed Church. On this episode, we're listening into a conversation between Reggie Smith and Jim Wolfe. The Reverend Dr. Reggie Smith is a diversity consultant for the Thrive Ministry of the Christian Reformed Church. The Reverend Jim Wolfe is the longtime pastor of Lawndale Christian Reformed Church in Chicago. He was also a friend of Eugene Peterson, with Peterson referring to him as my urban pastor. We invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy this insightful conversation.
I think Jim came to Lawndale in 1977, if I'm not mistaken.
And
78. And came as this guy from the south side of Chicago and became pastor of Lawndale in 1981. And Jim was one of those people that my brother hung around with, and I wanted to know where my brother was going. So my brother found this basketball court that happened to be in this church. And, you know, it's 1974. And I want to play basketball. Why can't I come? And my brother did everything to distract his younger brother to follow him. But I followed him. And there is Jim, as this guy in 77 comes to find out what this Lawndale thing is all about. And Jim is one of my, is my mentor, who was, who I still blame for getting me into the ministry. And I still haven't forgotten that. Yeah. And so I come with knowing that he spent 12 years with Eugene Peterson going back and forth from Montana to Chicago. And I just had some rich conversations with Jim over the years about his interactions with Eugene Peterson. And one of the things that kind of stuck out to me is that he always mentioned the God pool. And I kind of, what is this God pool thing? And so I begin with that first question, Jim. The God pool, what is that? And what does that have to do with you being a pastor?
Okay. Yeah, that's something probably, you know, I didn't get from Eugene. I sort of worked with Eugene on. The God pull is a good pull. It pulls us through our BS and into participating and being empowered into God's GPS. Okay. I often say that at funerals, and people gasp when I say BS. So it's some of the salty language. But by that, I mean broken stories. God pulls us through. He doesn't pull us out of them. He pulls us through our broken stories and empowers us to participate in good and pleasing stories, I would put it. God's salvation stories. It's empowerment. It's a verb. It's an action. What I mean by that is we're being pulled into, as Eugene would say, fully alive like Christ. We're being pulled into the presence of Christ in the right here and the right now. And what Eugene would say right now to us, he would say, hey, put down your notes, put down your papers, and God is here. And that's all we need. I'll get to that in a few moments. But the God pull is personal. It's participatory. It's about keeping company. If I were to say anything to pastors, and the way that Eugene and the way that I did it, was keep company. Keep company. I use the word relating ships. I don't use the word relationships because it's about a verb. It's about action. It's about engaging. It's about participating. The new word that I sort of came, or I didn't come up with it. Somebody gave it to me. Rather than saying we're being pulled into the kingdom of God. Yeah, we all talk about the kingdom of God. Take the G out of kingdom and think about it as kingdom. We are kingdom We are engaged in kingdoming. So that's the pull. It's a verb. It's action. Every step is an arrival. That's Eugene's phrase again. So anyway, that's a little explanation of the gospel.
Okay.
And the best way to get at it is for me and you to tell some stories, or I'll tell some stories.
All right. Well, tell us some stories. What did that look like in your own story, coming from South Holland, Illinois, to the hood,
right,
North Lawndale?
Well, I want to just tee it up here first with two of you. Eugene helped me tee this up. One of Eugene's lines is this: we are not ourselves by ourselves. And the other comes from the Message. It's my favorite passage. Matthew 11. Are you tired? Are you weary? Are you burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me. And you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Work with me. Walk with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't put anything on you too heavy or ill-fitting. Keep company. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live lightly and freely. That sort of tees up what I want to say. I sort of have divided my life into two parts. There's the first third, and there's the second part would be the second two thirds. The first third is, I came up in South Holland, Illinois, if anybody knows where that is. But I came up in it's a south suburb of Chicago. It's maybe 25 miles, 30 miles from Lawndale, 25 probably. Very close, but a totally different world. I grew up in the late 50s through the 60s in green pastures of suburbia around onion fields. I grew up with the cord of three strands, the church, the family, and the school. They were all interconnected. You couldn't ask for a more Christian reformed, if we all know what that is, a tight community. But what I want to say is it was a yoke I couldn't bear. Because the cord of three strands is a wonderful thing that's not easily broken, but the cord of three strands can also choke you to death. And that's what it was doing to me. There's a saint that's gone on. She grew up in the Christian Reformed Church. She put it this way. She says, I thought that maybe I could make angel.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that resonated in me. It's this abstract regimen of rules. It's this scorekeeper constantly grading you. And those things stuck me. I put it that way. Because I look at the pull as something that you're always moving along, okay? Pull is always to keep us going forward. I believe that from the bottom of my heart is God wants us to keep moving forward. As Peterson puts, through the confused complexities of this entangled country of sin and salvation, God brings us to a finish, to a ripe finish. But I was stuck. And I needed to be delivered. I'll just put it that way. And for all the profession of belonging, I know it's in our catechism, we belong and feel belonging in South Holland. Maybe it was there. I might have missed it. Okay. I miss a lot of stuff. I'm slow. Okay. But I'll be the first to admit I'm a slow dude. That's why it took me 45 years to do this. Shoot. But I needed to be graciously pulled into two, what I would consider radical places of hospitality. I needed to be embraced into two two heavy hitters came my way. Former pastor, Vern Vanders, he said, Jim, man, you've had two heavy hitters come your way, man. God didn't waste any time. He knew you needed a big, big dose of some drugs. and the two heavy hitters were the African-American community and Eugene. And they still are. So that's where I found radical hospitality.
Well,
I look at those two communities,
Yeah. Yeah.
The African American community, Reggie was there, you know. I knew his mother, I knew his father, I knew his sisters, I knew his brothers. I went to Mickey D's so many times. Hanging out in my car. I went to Unity Fellowship Baptist Church. That's where Reggie's from.
Yeah.
That's right. He came to know the Lord way before we got him. But yeah, I came to from that South Holland setting, looking for hospitality and a place to belong. And I can still remember Reggie played basketball. I know his original name. I probably shouldn't put that out
there. You should not.
Okay.
Because I know where you live.
I know what they used to call him.
You do, but I know where you live.
Anyway. But yeah, I will say this about Reggie. I used to give Reggie a quarter almost every day. Almost every day I gave him a quarter. Now, that doesn't sound like nothing today, I know. Back in the 70s. That was quite a bit of money. But what he did with it was, the reason I gave him a quarter was, he bought a newspaper every day and he read it. So I said, wow, this guy reads a newspaper. I'm going to give him a quarter. Let him read a newspaper. That's a good thing. But anyway, one time that was a foolish thing. They made me the coach, this white man, a coach all day. Can white men jump? But anyway, they made me the coach of these young guys. And I came in with my rules and regiment and all that junk. And I threw one guy off of the team. I says, you weren't at the Bible session and you didn't do this and you didn't do that. And you're not going to get a trophy. Well, you start talking about folks' trophy, as Reggie knows. And I didn't know the word was hardware. You're not messing with my hardware. Well, this guy, he promptly left the game. I threw him out of the game. He went out and he promptly lowered three tires on my car. And after the game, we all came out. The word got out. You know, Ricky, man, he, what he did to Jim. They called me Jim. I was Jim. Anyway, man, what's Jim going to do, man? And Anthony Anderson was he was their leader. He was their leader. Mm-hmm. He was like, man, what is Jim going to do to Ricky, man? All this stuff. I came out there. I opened up the trunk, and I had three spares. And Anthony gasped and he says, my God, he says, this white man came to the ghetto prepared.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Reggie was there. I won't explain why I had three spares, but anyway. I had three spares. Fast forward 2 years later, Anthony Anderson was shot and killed. 1 month, two weeks after I was ordained. My first funeral. And all those basketball players were there for pallbearers. And, you know, I had to do the funeral. The place was packed. And I was, that was the first. That was, I think, the first, you know. But as we walked in, I remember, I can't remember who said it. Somebody said it for the group, the pallbearers. They said, "Jim, we got your back." And yeah. That's hospitality. And African Americans and the young people that I work with, Reggie included, their question, they didn't care about infralapsarianism or superlapsarianism. They didn't care about all those big whatever. They didn't care about that stuff. And that's all I've been pounded in my head. You know, I just come out of Calvin Seminary, no less. All they cared about is, are you for real? Are you going to walk with us? Are you going to stay with us? Are you just going to use us so you can jump on to the next thing or write a book about us? I mean, are you really going to laugh and cry with us and hang out with us? And hospitality, you know, the word means love of the strange. And the flip of it was the African American community was loving this strange white person. That's the flip. You know, I thought I'm gonna go in there and help these black people. Shoot. Ain't worked that way. African Americans, I've learned, and see, here's, I gotta quick say this because I'm white. I cannot speak for the black community. I can bear witness to what I see. Eugene helped me with that. Eugene said to me, he said, "Jim, you need to write something because you have a front row seat. And those folks up there in the mezzanine, they don't see the game very good. But you're right there, right at the front seat." Now, I'm not in the game yet. I'm not in the game. And that's the fine line. That's the fine line. But I can bear witness to the game. So what I say is, I'm not speaking for the black community. Reggie can do that. I can. And that's a fine line to walk. That is a very fine line. But what I'm bearing witness to is I pick up a, and this is, I believe, the Christ in the African American community. There's a tenacity, an ironic tenacity. James Baldwin names it. I'm taking his word. There's an ironic tenacity there. There's also a creativity. African Americans have had to be creative in how to go forward.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Man. To the almost to the word like clever. They're clever. How do we get across the street with all these semis and buses and whatever? We got to figure out a way to get across the street, and they are creative in doing that. Much more than I am. And the third is, they carry the power of forgiveness. There's no greater power for them to be kind and to be hospitable to me. Takes an incredible amount of forgiveness. Incredible. So I came to Lundell and I said, "Hey, I want to keep company with that, man. This is what I want to keep company with." And yeah, as I said to Reggie before, they did save my life.
So how did Eugene show that kind of radical hospitality to you?
Well, I guess, you know, what Eugene was able to do was give me the language to put on what I already was doing. And what I was doing intuitively and what I was being led by the spirit to do. Eugene equipped me with the language and the thinking and the vision and all of that. I mean, yeah. But I'll just reflect. My first meeting with him, one of my first meetings with him, we sat on the deck. He lives in Montana. You Alaska person. Sit on the deck, look out at Flathead Lake. It's a beautiful place. He's got a beautiful place. And I came out there the very first time, and I had all my books and notes and all my questions for him, and shoot. And he said to me, he says, Jim, put the book down. He says, everything we need is right here. And man, I was like blown away. I was like, what? Shoot, I got questions. I got this. I got, you know, what is this? And then he said, and we looked at an osprey making a nest over by a tree. Oh my gosh. He totally disarmed me. You talk about an unforced rhythm of grace. Oh my God. And then later he says to me, he says, because I had been bombarded with this at this time. You got to realize, especially then, the church growth stuff was big stuff. You know, Christian Reformed Church, I went to a conference there at Schuller's thing, you know, in the 90s. And by the year 2000, we're going to have 400,000. And man, they gave you the I wish I had the coffee cup. They actually had a coffee cup.
Yes, I remember the coffee cup.
Shoot. And I was bombarded with this stuff. And in fact, they were using some of that stuff to try to shut Lawndale down. I'm telling you, they absolutely were. Eugene says to me, he says, well, he says, if you really want to talk about that church growth principles and stuff, he says, that's fine. He says, it's like walking on ice. He says, you can't do it without some sand. You got to have some grit. Pastor's got to have some grit to walk on. Oh, yeah. And then he says to me later, he says, better yet, Jim, he says, maybe someday you can write something for your denomination. He says, that is after they get off their church growth kick. But anyway, that's part of the hospitality he was showing. He disarmed all that stuff.
So what would you say is Eugene's most important doctrine in terms of pastoring that you picked up from him?
He would say it right away, the Trinity, which to me was an abstraction. I'll just be honest with you. It was a fairly big abstraction. But what Eugene meant by that was living into the Trinity, being enfolded by the three persons and being engaged in the process of enfolding others into the process, into the dance. Everything about the Trinity for Peterson was personal, particular, relational. Everything about the Trinity was a verb. It had nothing to do with a geometric dimension. So for him, it was a dance. It was an engagement with people. It meant that when every step was an arrival. In other words, every time you showed up and engaged with somebody else, you were engaging with and in the Trinity and being aware of that. And he found there wasn't a speck of abstraction in it. And in the African American, and Reggie, you know this better than I do. In fact, you know how to sing. I was watching last night some stuff on Juneteenth Day. I was moved by the song "Strange Fruit" again
by Billie Holiday.
Billie Holiday. They did a thing, and it moved me. It moved me again to realize the soul force, and that's a word from John Lewis. The soul force to get through stuff, and as I the one of the best places to find that, and you know that, Reggie, and you sang that, it's in the music.
It's in the music.
Man, Reggie, a couple of weeks ago, I was trying to sing your song. I'm no ways tied. I've come too far from where I started from.
I don't know how many times I sung that at Lawndale.
The road would be easy. I don't get that.
He brought me this far to leave me.
Reggie used to sing that song. And I brought it up again a few weeks ago. And Reggie used to sing this song, man, but I can't do it. But yes, it's in that music, man. If you want, you want to get engaged in the soul force, how did they get through? How do you get through? I can't. I got a front row seat, okay? But I can taste and smell the sweat, okay? But I'm not the sweat. I'm not the one.
Yeah.
But I sure as hell, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sure as heck able to be empowered by being around it.
I'll put
it that. When you watch Michael Jordan play basketball, you get empowered to go back out there and play. Okay.
Yes.
You ain't gonna be Michael Jordan.
Nope.
So that's how. So I was far better off getting in my car and driving down to Mr. and Mrs. Taylor in Sand Hill, Mississippi, and spend a weekend and go to Mount Pisgah Baptist Church and eat chicken. No, we ate catfish. We ate catfish. I learned and engaged in relationships, okay? I went down there. I experienced it. I touched it. I faced it. I learned from it. I got to listen to the stories. I went over to Lower Peachtree, Alabama, and saw George Holloway. He took his raccoon or whatever out of a skunk or whatever he eats. Thank God it was frozen, so we had to go to the white folks and eat by some white folk restaurants. Oh, man. And to go see Ed Williams in Texas. I mean, I was far, far, far better in terms of learning about relationships, learning about the Trinity, if you will, believe it or not, engaging with people. Than going to any of these conferences. So I guess my words are invest in relationships. Stop trying to figure it all out. I still do the same thing. Stop looking for the secret sauce. The secret sauce is keep company in relationships. Yeah.
So a last word. How do these two powerful pulls presently work in your life now?
Yeah, this is where it gets very personal. I don't know if I can, I'll try to convey a few things. The two phrases of Peterson that I carry with me right now is he said, Jim, everything we need is right here. But he also said to me one day, he said, Jim, sometimes I doubt it all. Every bit of it. And he wasn't just speaking intellectually. I doubt it all. And so, oh man. The last time I was with Eugene, we sat on the deck again, and at that table, at that table was Eugene, who would be gone in 2 more months. He was already having some dementia. Was Jan, his wife, who would be gone in 8 months. And was my wife, Kathy, who would be gone in 2 years. And me. And I carry that supper because it was our last supper. And I also brought the last supper to you. And the four of us had that together. But as I sat at that table, or now I look back at myself at that table, because, yeah, I was Eugene's connection to Chicago, no doubt. He saw me as his Chicago connection. That's more how he would put it. And Eugene as well knew that he was a front row seat to that, or he wasn't even a front row seat. He just wanted to hear about it. But I was sitting there because there were voices around me. There were the Anthony Anderson voices that said, "Hey, Jim, we got your back." There were the Mildred voices, a 93-year-old African-American mother of one of my best friends, Ed Williams, who, after I was beat down one time by a group of young punks or whatever, and I told her I wanted to quit, and she looked at me and she said, "Quit? Boy, what's wrong with you? You ain't quitting. You get your blankety blank back out there and get back to work. You ain't quitting." And here she's 93 years old, from Mississippi, dying of pancreatic cancer. So as I, you know, I look at myself and I say, these are the voices that are in me. Not just Eugene's, not just Jan's, not just Kathy's. You know, there's the African-American voices that have said to me, "Quit? You ain't quitting." When Eugene says, "Sometimes I doubt it all," you know, we as pastors have to be able to enfold doubt, ambiguity, and shadows.
Yes.
And everything in my first third of my life, there were no ambiguities. There were no doubts. If there was doubt, it was an intellectual or abstract doubt, okay? Which was fairly meaningless. But if we're really going to heal souls, and I'm including my soul, we're going to really heal souls, we have to be able to embrace real doubt. And I'll just say this as a witness. African-Americans are better at that because they've had to do that. And you know, I hear the phrase around me all the time from African-Americans, "Moving right along." I'm like, "Moving right along? Yeah, how come I get damn stuck?" You can move right along. And you got more obstacles than I got. Shoot. You know, we have to do better. We have to do better. We need to do more than just help. Peterson uses this phrase. We have to do better than just help people move across the street to avoid the moral mud puddles. Because on that street, there's trucks and semis and drive-by shootings. And, you know, and African-Americans, they keep moving right along. And I've been pulled by that to get across the street and to keep moving right along. And so, yeah, everything I need is right here. And that's why I thank God I can stay here and keep company here. Yeah. I'll leave it at that.
Jim, thank you so much for bearing your soul with us. I don't think a lot of us was ready for the mic drops you were going to drop on us. And thank you for just being honest and really kind of sharing Eugene Peterson's soul and the African-American soul and your own soul with us. So thank you for honoring us in this way. Because I know that you don't like doing this.
No, but I'll tell you this, Reg. This has prompted me to do some very painful writing. But also in doing the painful writing, I've touched on some gold. And I want to keep mining that gold. And I know it takes energy and pain to do it. A lot of that pain is my stuff from the first third of my life. And so that's painful. That stuff hasn't gone away. That stuff's still there.
Yep.
And it took, you know, it's an ongoing, it's a rhythm. That's that unforced rhythm of grace that Peterson writes about it. But anyway, this process has helped me do some mining. And, you know, Peterson always would tell me, you need to write something. You need to write something. I was like, well, this got me into thinking about writing something.
Well, I want to open it up for, let's open up the conversation for questions or for either Jim or I, and let's have a conversation. Anybody has a question?
Can we start with the one that's in the chat from Kurt?
Oh.
Maybe
yes, we can. Yeah,
let's start with that one.
Okay, sometimes I feel like relocating into a marginalized community requires a kind of naturalized citizen in that community, taking on many of the customs and habits and cultures of that community. It seems you've done a lot of that work. How have you held on to some of the culture and friendships that you were born into, or did you let most of those relationships and identity die? Is there value in doing so?
The day I moved into Lawndale, that night, my father told me, Jim, you're throwing away your life. That was painful. It was a lot of anger, a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety that I still deal with. That was in 1978. And you got to understand too, I grew up in a white suburbia that it was racist. I'll just be honest with you. It was very racist. And part of my coming to Lawndale was sticking the middle finger back up at them. You know, this is what I think of you guys. I'll be honest. Yeah, but that was my dad, and they used to come, and they would do the birthdays and the whole bit, but almost inevitably I'd have an argument with them before he'd leave. It wasn't until 2004 when we dedicated a $4 million building. Yeah, I know. Folks get impressed by buildings. I'm about relationships. But thank God, you got to have some buildings in order to have relationships. So anyway, my wife and I, Kathy, had a big part in making it happen. And he came to that. This was about 5 years before he died. And he came up to me at the end of his cane, with his cane, and he says, "Jim, I never dreamed any of this could have ever happened." That was about as, that's as good as it got. I got that. I got that. But yeah, those ties back home. No, I don't have a lot of ties back home. I pick and choose who my people are for the most part. You know, I've been here 45 years, so they're anchored here for the most part. But I, my close, close friends are here. Okay. I still have what I may call associates or whatever, a couple, nothing deep though, really. Yeah, it's sort of like Abraham. I had to go to a new land. Guess he went back to Haran once in a while. I found hospitality here, and I still have a front row seat. I'm not totally in the game. You know, so it is sort of, you whenever you have a sense of loneliness. There is a sense of loneliness. I will admit that. Because the deeper I get to know the African American community, the more I realize. I was just telling somebody this just recently. I says, you know, some white people, they think all black people, you know, I shouldn't even be saying this kind of thing. But anyway, I'll say it. They think black people are just really white people with dark skin on. But they're really white people down underneath. And I'm like, no, they're unique. They got their own identity, their own culture. It's incredibly unique. And there's a holiness about it. And there's a soulfulness about it. There's a part of it that I can't ever get. All I can say is I'm going to take my shoes off and I'm on holy ground. That's the best I can do.
Wow. Jim, you dropping the mics, man. You dropping them. Mark?
Yeah, thanks, Jim. This is really rich, thin, sacred space. So we're grateful. I more of a comment than a question, but just your dad actually quoted the words of the Lord Jesus to you. You're throwing your life away. And in throwing your life away, you really found it. And it's just ironic to me. He meant it as a slam, but it was actually quoting the Lord's words that were very true for you as you found your life in that space in Lawndale. So for your faithfulness and for your witnessing to that here with us today.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I carried the Jesus's words from it later, not right away.
We asked the question of urban leaders initially, how can the CRC give its gift to the city, to leaders in the city? We were challenged early on by an African-American pastor of the CRC who had come into the CRC, Clarence Presley from Seattle, where he re-shifted that question. And he said, it's not about first, how can the CRC give its gift to the city, but it's the need the CRC has to learn how to open the gift of the city. You can't give a gift unless you're able to open a gift, to receive. You're chronicling the gift the city has been to you. And I'm wondering, what's the heart of like, if you had a microphone and could speak to the 850 or however many congregations there are in the CRC right now and in the US and Canada, what would you want them to hear by way of opening up the cities where God has placed them, opening up the spaces where their parishes are located? Because you've talked against this, you know, church growth model idea of we need bigger parking lots, bigger parking lots, bigger parking lots, so more people can drive their cars to the space, right? But you've been very countercultural in that reality of what Lawndale has meant to you and the gift it's been. So what would you say that the at the heart of opening up the gift of one's place is?
It's all personal. It's all relational. It's all presence. It's being attentive. I've had the wonderful gift of time, because this thing takes time, and it takes listening, putting oneself in a posture that they listen, and not, you got, you know, I'm guilty as a white person of coming here and speaking first too, way too often. Way too. And I still do it. I just was confronted with it just last week. You always got to get, you know. there's no, Eugene would say it too. There's just no way to pastor. There's no strategy. There's no principle. It's just placing your person in the presence of the living God, the Trinity, and allowing, you know, out of these relationships that I've been engaged in, wonderful things have come. Changed lives have come, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Reggie. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and as Peterson says, most of what we do as pastors, we don't even know we're doing it while we're doing it.
Well.
We don't. Reggie tells me he sat down in my basement here at the house, and I don't remember that. You know, and people come to me all the time. You remember this? No, I don't. And Peterson just says, yeah, most of what we do, we don't even know we're doing it while we're doing it. And but out of those relating ships, I know folks love to talk about, I call it the three Bs, the buildings, the bodies, and the body, the buildings, the budgets, and the body count.
Mm.
All right. Yeah, and I don't get caught up in that as much, but yeah, out of all of that came a school that has 200 kids in it, and it's a wonderful, wonderful community. It's a family. That's the thing. It's a family in the heart of this impersonal, horrendous. The African American community is under assault. To get across the street today, just to get across the street, you got to watch the gunfire. You hear about Chicago all the time. There's shootings, killings everywhere, all the time. It's in my neighborhood, just to get across the street. But in the midst of all that, there's this community. I go to these school events, and I hear parents say, this is like a family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wow, yeah, that's it. It's a family. In the midst of totally alienation, totally impersonalization.
Hmm.
There's this family that supports each other and holds each other up to get across the street. So, yeah, out of all those relating ships come the buildings. And, you know, we got a robust youth ministry that reaches these young kids. Now, are they all in church? No. And more, that's our mission. Unfortunately, the old system's not working.
Yes.
They ain't coming to church. You got to go to them. And, you know, we got recovery groups going. I go to the recovery groups. And I mean, that's where the church is happening. And by that, I mean, that's where the people are finding the support to get across the street.
And I'm just wondering, I know we're almost at the end of the time, but I'm just, you know, dying to ask you, Jim, just 40 years in Lawndale, you know, how rare that is nowadays with I don't know what the standard of pastor at a church for 7 years, that's long in many cases, 40 years. But I'm just wondering, you know, I'd love to hear you just say something about Kathy. In the sense of, you know, what is her most endearing legacy in your life in 40 years of pastoring a church with her, and all, you know, the role that she played through all of that, walking with those 40 years. I just love to hear you talk about that for a minute, because I never met her, but I can only imagine how much of an incredible, when I used to go to the gang prisons in Guatemala, the gang members would say, man, you must have some incredible wife to let you come in here. And they never met my wife, but I can only imagine what a gift she was in so many ways. I just love to hear about that for a second.
Yeah, thank you for asking that. Because the reality is, I couldn't have done what I've done or we've done unless we were together. Kathy was a farm girl, is a farm girl. She grew up on the farm in Indiana, not far from where I grew up in South Holland, but just on the other side of the border. I mean, her folks, no way that they want her moving to the inner city. In fact, they talked about her living out there and me living over here in the beginning. But she's a tough farm girl. Reggie knows her. She's still hard working. She, you know, fired 15 janitors.
Yes. You didn't play.
She was the tough one. I wasn't the tough. She was the tough one. When it came to the physical stuff that needed to be done, she would get it done.
Get it done.
And she found purpose and mean in getting it done and getting it done right.
Mm-hmm.
And she was always there to be engaged with what we were doing. So she didn't take on a separate job. She worked at the school. She worked part-time for the church, too. I mean, she was like my right hand. I mean, yeah. So, she got pancreatic cancer at the end. Went real fast, 5 months. We did get the last 6 weeks in good together. But one of the things she's told me is she says, Jim, you're free. You're free to go. To keep doing what you're doing. Do I miss her? Yeah, a whole lot. Would this stuff happen without her? Probably not. She, as Reggie knows, she she was there on the physical side doing stuff all the time, fixing this, doing that. And the school the other day was saying, hey, we need a building engineer. Well, the reason they're calling for a building engineer is because Kathy was the engineer.
She was the engineer.
Yeah, she would be the one to fix everything and get that solved and that problem solved. And yeah. The beautiful thing was with Eugene and Jan and her. The reason why I got to hook up long-term with Jean was because it was Jan and Kathy. Jan and Kathy were two birds in the same nest. They were earthy, down, you know. They would use some salty language, all right? And they loved to talk, and they loved to build each other up, and they loved to point the finger at their husbands and say, those two folks don't even talk. Let them go sit over there and sit and look at the bird. But Kathy was empowered by being in. She was intimidated as hell there. I'm just telling you, she was intimidated as hell. Our very first day we went there, I remember she got.
I remember.
And her blouse. And I'm going like, we're late for the Petersons. She says, I'm not going to see the Petersons. We catch up on my blouse. We got to go to Carson Perry Scott and buy a new blouse. And then when we came out, she's like, wow, now what do you think? I was like, yeah, right. They totally disarmed us. But anyway, she became empowered into being a more, I would say, Kathy was a hands-on, physical work. And I'll just say this too. I don't want to talk bad about it, but she would walk out of my sermon.
Often.
Yes.
Often. I mean,
she would just get up and walk out.
She just get up and walk out.
And it wasn't necessarily because the sermon was so terrible, although she would remind me of what I said. But it was because she just was always in motion. You talk about a verb, God being a verb. She was always in motion. She couldn't sit that long. So she had to get up and do this and do that. You know, but coming to Jean and Jan, that began to calm her down in a sense, and to let her open herself, spirit up, and let Jan pour. Jan was an incredibly spiritual, I mean, Jean obviously was, but Jan was very, 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 she poured into people. She exuded hospitality. And she poured into Kathy, and that strengthened me. That strengthened me a lot.
Thank you for listening. Gift of the City is a product of the Resonate Community of Practice for Urban Ministry. For more about Resonate, go to resonateglobalmission.org.